Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Gary Gramling.
And I'm Connor Orr.
So Connor, week 17 has almost gone. It's come for the most part. And this was kind of, I don't know about you, this was kind of like all the nightmares coming together. It's like everything we suspected might come to be. The Packers are still in it. The Buccaneers win an absolutely terrible division. David Blau makes a return to the field. All the things that sort of kept you up at night through October and November all coming to fruition.
Yeah. You and I were talking about this before the show, but speaking of nightmares, if anyone else was playing Mike Evans in their fantasy football championship today, just a miserable day. But I don't know. I'm excited. I think that the ending of this season ended up kind of perfect, to the point where my theory, which I bring up sometimes only because I know it bothers Andy Benoit and I know that he still listens, this has to be fixed in some way, shape, or form, right? Like, come on. I mean, we had the Raiders coming down to the last second with Jared Stidham putting on an electric fire show. There's a lot of Baker Mayfield at the end of the season. There's just all these there's like five teams now competing for these last spots, and boy, I don't know, it always just seems to work out this way. It's too convenient, Gary.
Oh, as I always say, it's just the mediocrity doing what mediocrity just does. Yeah. and a couple things rise out of it, and then we talk about it. That's true. That's what this podcast is. Let's start Sunday afternoon, though. Let's go Vikings at Packers here, because the Packers are now one win away from making the postseason, which seemed incredibly unlikely just a couple weeks ago. I mean, you remember the Jordan Love game when he came off the bench against the Eagles and looked good, and it was kind of like, yeah, I don't know, might as well roll out Jordan Love because you're not going anywhere else. And yeah, apparently they're going to the playoffs if they beat the Lions at home in Week 18. But I guess we get to kind of revisit this conversation. The Packers are going to be cast, if they do win next week, they're going to be cast as the team that no one wants to play in the playoffs, which I don't necessarily agree with. I find it fascinating that they're not completely the inverse of what they were a year ago, but you just still have all these question marks offensively. And they're still there. It's getting better, but there are still offensive question marks. The defense is kind of getting there, but maybe not quite. And then the special teams, which was the Achilles heel last year, is now, you know, Rich Bisaccia has built a monster here that just can't be stopped.
Yeah, I'm glad we did the podcast first, because I'm writing about the Packers for SI.com at some point. In the near future, and my options that I laid out in front of me for a column were either I don't want to play the Packers in the playoffs, or I very much do want to play the Packers in the playoffs. And I think I'm leaning towards I very much do want to play the Packers in the playoffs, because, you know, Aaron Rodgers said it himself. I watched the interview he did with Tracy Wolfson after the game, and he's got this, got this smile on his face, and he's like, and everybody's saying, you know, when's the offense going to come around? Well, we figured it out. And then he's like, and, you know, you get the, and then he said, Nixon, and he's like, what he's done for this team, I can't even begin to describe it. And then Jair Alexander shutting down Justin Jefferson, and I'm just saying, you know, 99% of it was Jair Alexander and Nixon, like, and your special teams and all the things that you can't reasonably depend on. throughout a playoff run. And so I just think, yeah, I mean, A.J. Dillon's still kind of plotting. You know, Green Bay missed a deep shot to Christian Watson today that would have changed maybe our perception of the offense a little bit and made them feel a little bit more like a laser light show. But I don't know, man. Like, these backs just don't do it for me right now. I'm not scared of them the way that I was a year ago.
See, it's like I'm not scared of the passing game and the quarterback that much, whereas I think the backs are the relative strength of the offense at this point. And I just don't think it's a particularly good offense. I don't think they necessarily figured it out. The kind of team I don't want to play in the playoffs. First of all, you don't want to play a superhero quarterback. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is that at this point in his career, especially as they continue to try to work through some things. I also don't want to play against a defense that leaves me very few paths to solutions, and I don't think that's the Packers. I think even in this game, when Jair Alexander, you know, he shuts down Justin Jefferson, and the few times where they sort of scheme Jefferson open, Kirk Cousins just didn't find him. TJ Hockenson is kind of running free in the middle of the field. I mean, the Vikings did move the ball, even on a really, really bad, unimpressive day. They just, they just kind of stunk it up and made a bunch of mistakes in between there.
And, I mean, the Packers had a punt blocked. Aaron Rodgers fumbled in the middle of the field. I don't know. They didn't play a perfect game either. And I think it just got out of hand, as it kind of does with the Vikings sometimes. Like, I think if you take away what they do well, it's just, you know, they are weaker after you do that than any of the other teams when you take away their strengths. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. My argument against the backs, I mean, they're fantastic. They can catch the ball. There was like a 3rd-and-1 in the first quarter of this game where Dillon just had one guy to beat until the edge, and then he was able to get a full head of steam going towards the first down marker, and he still got stopped by I understand. Like, yes, it's still amazing that he does what he does, and he did break a lot of tackles. He had a lot of full head of steam moments, but I don't know. I just watched him a lot this year, and I feel like still in short yarded situations, like, not as incredibly reliable and automatic as I remember in years past. I don't know. Am I making that up, do you think? Or is that an overgeneralization? Because I'm open to that being overgeneralization.
It probably is something of an overgeneralization, which is fine. I mean, it's what we do on this podcast. But I remember the play very specifically that you're referencing. It was a little toss play to get outside. Mm-hmm. It almost got blown up in the backfield. And then it didn't get blown up in the backfield. And yeah, when your 240-pound back gets a head of steam going straight downhill, you want to see him just explode through people. Yes. And everyone go flying back on their heels as he contacts them, and then at least fall forward, if not, you know, blast your way through like a comic book hero and do it that way. But that's not what he just sort of got stoned on that play. And, that was kind of it. And there have been a lot of moments like that this year. Again, it's all small sample size. And when that happens, let's say in the fourth quarter of a playoff game and A.J. Dillon is only on touch number 10 on the game, and, you know, maybe the result ends up being a little bit different. But, I still think that outside zone run game is the one thing that, I don't know, kind of is consistently successful.
And it can get hot. In games that can get hot, then you can't stop it.
And it's all just in relative terms, because, you know, especially when they get down in the red zone, you don't have that automatic with Devontae Adams anymore. It's just not an offense that is going to make anyone nervous at this point. That doesn't mean they can't go string together 3 wins in the postseason. It's very possible. I mean, they were probably the best team in the NFC the last 2 seasons, and they did not string together any wins in the postseason. So, they got one in the postseason 2 seasons ago. But, I don't know. It's just kind of a pretty good team at this point. I don't think they've gotten hot in a way that is like, oh man, they got this all figured out, and now it's going to be different going forward. I think it's just, you know, the special teams got hot. The defense fixed itself to an extent. The offense fixed itself to an extent. And now you have yourself a B-plus team at this point.
And if college is any indicator, Gary, you can you can get by in a B-plus attitude. So
yeah, yeah. They'll still they'll eventually hire you at Sports Illustrated.
Did they?
Connor and I are living proof.
Did they ask you about your GPA?
No, I don't know if I've ever had to. I mean,
did you put your GPA on your resume? Were you a resume GPA guy?
Yeah, but that was also when you had to be a resume GPA guy, right? It was like 2001. I haven't done anything with my resume since like 2004. It's been a long time.
Do you remember what your GPA was?
Yeah, I got it tattooed on my chest backwards so that I can see it every morning. No, it was either, it was in the 3.2s. I want to say it was like,
yeah, me too.
Yeah, I want to say it was like 3.21, but then it was like 3.4 within the major, my magazine journalism major.
Ah, there you go. French killed me. I got a D in French.
Mm.
And I got a C minus in, I got a C minus in politics of Europe. That's a hard one to fake your way through, you know?
Yeah.
Really can't fake your way through that one.
Oh, I made the mistake of plowing through the calculuses until I hit Calc 3, and it just wasn't going to work, and I had to drop that class. But that was a GPA suck right there. That was whatever the Packers' midseason run was. They were doing some Calc 3 type classes at 8:30 on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and they shouldn't have done that. As far as the Vikings go, I mean, they were desperate to see Jeff Saturday come out of that tunnel on the other side around halftime. But other than that, oh, man, it's like it's still the same team it's been. It kind of stinks that you've been blown out by a couple of playoff teams at this point. But, again, you're a little bit game flow dependent. Not completely, obviously, but defensively, it's still not there. I mean, both from a talent standpoint and from just an organizational standpoint, and Donatello is having a rough go replacing Mike Zimmer, who had a maybe not as rough a go as we thought a year ago. But, at one point, they only had 10 players on the field for a snap. I mean, it's just not working out here.
Yeah, and it's weird, too. I mean, I just, he has been a top Vic Fangio lieutenant for years. And mm-hmm. if there's anybody who knows that system as well as Fangio, it's Ed Donatell. And so I've just been surprised. I do think it's talent, though. I think you're relying on a very razor-thin margin of kind of veteran, deep veteran production, late-career veteran production, and that's just tough. I mean, this team needs kind of a windfall of foundational kind of young pieces. They're just not. This isn't a way that you would build a defense if you had a choice, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, very true. Well, they're still going to the postseason. They, I don't know, maybe they get the matchups they want and they end up making some noise.
It's going to be so annoying when they win the NFC and then they criticize all of us for saying that we didn't believe in them when we had every reason not to believe in them. It's a bad football team. It's not a bad football team. It's like an 8-9 football team.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the only way that happens is if you just get into a bunch of games where it's just weird stuff happening. It's weird turnovers. It's weird special teams plays.
Yes.
Because they're just not going to be good enough otherwise. They are good enough. A couple years ago, they went down to New Orleans, upset the Saints. Sure, yeah, they can go do that. Can they do that 3 times in a row? Oh, boy. I mean, it would be a sight to behold if it happened.
It sure would be.
49ers, Raiders.
All right, thanks as always to Jimmy Traina of the SI Media Podcast, providing us the station stops on the Jimmy train as we go through week 17 here. Let's start with 49ers Raiders. First of all, good on Josh McDaniels for kicking the PAT at the end of regulation. a tie would have meant a lot to this Raiders organization, so you really understand why he did that instead of playing for a win. But let's talk about Jarrett Stidham. I will... admit, number one, I think Derek Carr had earned the right to basically go out on his terms while he was still good, and he is still good, and he's going to be a good quarterback for someone next season. I was skeptical of Jarrett Stidham based on the short, you know, spurts we saw him while he was with the Patriots. Also, there was a very annoying kind of thing going on with the Patriots where people kept on, you know, anonymous sources would be like, ooh, you know, we had Jarrett Stidham ranked ahead of, like, good young quarterback X. Like, we think that highly of Jarrett Stidham type of stuff. And it's just like, all right, whatever. Can we stop with the Jarrett Stidham? But he was really good in this game. And early on, I continue to be skeptical because I think the 49ers were kind of feeling him out a little bit. And there were a couple of throws. I mean, there were a couple of times where just guys were wide open. And it was kind of like, okay, this is a defense that doesn't quite know what they're dealing with the opposing quarterback. And they'll get it figured out as the game goes on. As the game went on, the 49ers did clamp down a little bit, although obviously not completely. You saw Jarrett Stidham make some second reaction plays. And I think that's, look, I think that's what is going to separate him from being kind of a, you know, a low-end maybe starter and being maybe a guy who ends up being a quality starter in a couple years. We're talking about one game, so you can't draw any broad conclusions. But I thought it was incredibly promising what he showed as far as the ability to create and the ability to make throws from a really, really muddy pocket.
That the 60-yard touchdown to Davante Adams, where he got absolutely tattooed in the backfield, was a next-level throw. And just, yes, Davante Adams was open, but you're about to get torn to pieces in two different ways. You had a defender closing in on your face and you had a defender closing in on your side. And while it didn't necessarily have the same angular trouble as like the Joe Theismann hit, the ingredients were there. Like the same ingredients were there. And he was just like, whatever, and chucked it downfield. There were definitely a couple throws where I saw that, you know, McDaniels had guys schemed open immediately and you're like, throw it. And he didn't and held on to it. That's going to happen. But he looked pretty good in this game to the point where, I mean, I can't trust what anybody ever thinks or says in the NFL, but like, if you're Derek Carr, how did you not think this was part of the long con all along? Like, you signed this contract, but then like Jarrett Stidham's there and like, aren't you just looking at him every day being like, when is Josh McDaniels going to play this guy?
Yeah.
Because like at some point, just, you know, it's just what they do. The Patriot coaches just get into a place and they're like McKenzie executives. And they're just like, let's bring our guys in here. And it's just, it's the law of nature. It's impossible to fight. If you don't play, if you're not Daron Harmon, you have no spot on this team. You're not allowed to play for anybody associated with Bill Belichick.
Oh man. Yeah. It's a tough way for it to wrap up. And yeah, I rolled my eyes when I saw the whole, like, well, we're going to see what we have in Jarrett Stidham. And it was kind of like, you already know what you have. You played him a bunch when you were with the Patriots, and it didn't go very well at all. But this kind of looked like, it kind of looked like what you'd want Zach Wilson to be. I mean, you know, this is like the functional Zach Wilson is what you got in this game. And it is worth kicking the tires on this, and it's probably worth, if it goes well next week, you know, at least bringing him in and sort of making him the favorite for your quarterback competition next offseason.
Yeah, right, because you're not in a position to draft anybody. Obviously, you've closed the book on Derek Carr. I don't think you get a high enough comp pick in return to move you up enough to get into the conversation for like a Will Levis or whoever we think is going to be up there. So yeah. I agree. You know what I would do?
What would you do?
Anthony Richardson from Florida. You think he's going to be around in like the second round or the third round or something like that? I think he's going to get so much better this offseason, like during the pre-draft and stuff like that. I think they're going to make him into a player. And you have Jarrett Stidham, and you have Anthony Richardson. You kind of do like a two-headed monster sort of thing. I would love that.
It would be really cool. I don't think Anthony Richardson is going to get out of the first round. We'll see how it goes. I think everyone is going to be traits obsessed, considering what's going on with some of the young guys around the league. And Anthony Richardson is he's only traits at the moment. But someone's gonna be like, yeah, I can build that. Like someone's gonna, you know, and it's not a deep quarterback class. And someone's gonna say like, yeah, I'll scratch that lottery ticket and we'll see how it goes.
Can I tell you my favorite part of this game, Gary?
Yeah, please.
So the referee in overtime, I don't know if you noticed this, but do you know what I'm going to say?
No.
He mixed up his syllables and he said on the broadcast, whoever scurs forced instead of scores first. But he was doing it in like a ref voice, so he just goes, whoever scurs forced. And he sounded like the Swedish chef from the Muppets. And I... just sitting alone in my house, giggling to myself like a child, to the point where I sent it to editor Mitch and he did not respond. So I don't think anybody else thought it was as funny as I did.
Oh man, that's why Josh McDaniels played for overtime.
Whoever scores first wins overtime.
Panthers, Buccaneers.
All right, so here we go. The Bucs are, after all, going to the playoffs. They won this game. Everything that annoys you about this team at this point is going to live for at least another 2 weeks, perhaps longer. They'll host a playoff game. They'll get either like the Cowboys or the Eagles or the Cowboys or the Eagles most likely in their own building here. So this game again, there's going to be conversations about like, oh yeah, Bucks, they got right offensively. They figured things out. They put up they ended up putting up 30 because of the missed PAT at the end against good Panthers defense. But this game was really more of a series of coverage busts by the Panthers that let Mike Evans, who is like the one guy you wouldn't want to run downfield uncovered, to do that. He's like the one guy you cover in this scenario when you're guarding a lead in the fourth quarter, but we'll use it to cue up the Simpsons clip of the week here.
So, Mr. Malloy, it seems that the cat has been caught by the very person that was trying to catch him.
How ironic.
It doesn't make a ton of sense until you get to Principal Skinner's How Ironic. And I also I should add the line. I noticed that Mike Evans wore sneakers for sneaking, and that'll do it for the Simpsons clip of the week. But yeah, I mean this was it. It was like oh yeah, they were trailing, and then they repeatedly threw it downfield to a wide open guy who everyone knows is the guy they try to get wide open downfield.
Listen, save this to be clipped and played when Tom Brady wins another Super Bowl and I look like a huge idiot, but this team got carved up by Sam Darnold today. This is not a playoff caliber football team. The Panthers deserve to win this game. Not deserve, but should have won this game. And I don't know what the theory or the strategy is. I don't really want to think about it because it cost me a few shekels in terms of fantasy football winnings, but yeah, how do you not cover that guy? Kirk Herbstreit, who just follow me here, is the
yep.
He's the most obvious analyst in the history of football, to the point where I think it was like a Rams game a couple of weeks ago, and he goes, yeah, 9-9 Aaron Donald, you know, you got to watch out for that guy. And I was like, sure, you definitely have to watch out for the greatest defensive player perhaps in the history of football. Like, he, you know, if Kirk Herbstreit was running this defense, he'd be like, yeah, 1-3, let's make sure we guard that guy, and nobody did it. They just, you know, maybe they should hire Kirk Herbstreit. I don't know.
Oh man, there was the one where he was like completely uncovered. It was just such a feeble deke off the line of scrimmage, where he's kind of, you know, like loafing off the line of scrimmage, and it's like CJ Henderson just stops, and it's like, no, that's the thing he's doing. Oh my goodness. Heartbreaking here for the Panthers, who obviously had a nice run. Let's hope Steve Wilkes and Ben McAdoo get to run this back a little bit. Yeah, Ben McAdoo going out there.
I'm telling you, buddy.
Just ripping up that Bucs defense with Sam Darnold and company.
I thought he did a nice job.
He did. He absolutely did.
They look good in those teal unis today, too. I like it. It was those... like the teal-white combo, I think, works for Sam, stylistically. He looks good in that.
Okay.
Saints, Eagles.
And the Saints were eliminated, though. They did knock off the Eagles, which this was kind of a neat, if you are a draft obsessive, and I know the city of Philadelphia is, this was one of those games where it's like, ooh, if the Eagles beat the Saints, they move their draft pick even higher up in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't quite work out here. A couple of things. This is a good week for, I don't know, what's the adjective I want to use here to describe Marshawn Lattimore and Jaire Alexander as guys who are just kind of dominant when they feel like it, which is not always, but when they want to be, they are. And they both had really big, big games this week. You're not going to draw huge conclusions off a game with your backup quarterback if you're the Eagles. But I think the one thing that continues to be a little bit worrisome is in the postseason, are you going to end up facing, let's say, a 49ers, or we talk about the Packers a little bit and their run game. Mm-hmm. Are they going to just string together a lot of 8 and 9 minute drives and sort of kill the clock in the second half and really shrink that margin of error for your offense? Because that's kind of what happened here. Granted, the Eagles could not do anything offensively in the first half when they actually got the ball, but I think they at one point had run 9 plays with like 30 seconds left in the half because they just went 3 and out. But you know, Saints opened this with like a 9 minute drive, and there was a whole lot of like Taysom Hill 11 man run game, just, you know, running into a pile, and then the pile moves like 4 yards down the field, and then you get up and you do it again.
Concerning amount of broken tackles on Taysom Hill runs, by the way, for a team that spent an awful lot of money down the stretch to upgrade their run defense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just still can't accept. I know that he's very good at this. I just can't accept the idea that people can't tackle him. It doesn't work in my brain, and I'll stick with that. But this offense looked disjointed. Gardner Minshew just kept pulling the ball down like he wasn't getting rid of it, and then almost had a kind of a vintage, like Freddie Kitchens, Baker Mayfield-y kind of thing where he was just drifting and trying to make something happen downfield that wasn't going to happen, and it didn't look good. And, I mean, whatever, they're 13-3, so
yeah.
Who really cares? And you're going to get Jalen Hurts back for the playoffs, but you're right. I mean, I do think that we know what this team's vulnerability is. And it'll be interesting whether or not they're able to mask it for long enough to make it to the Super Bowl.
There was like a third and medium or two where he like, you know, pulled it down, tried to create something, and just didn't really go anywhere. And it was kind of like, that was Jalen Hurts. That's probably like a 7 yard gain and a first down,
right.
And the drive is alive at this point.
Yes.
By the way, do you know who Andy Benoit's comp was for Gardner Minshew when Gardner Minshew was a rookie in Jacksonville?
Oh, let me think.
And I can't not see it now. Although it's taken on a different feel when I tell you in a second.
Is it Tim Couch?
No, he's like Gardner Minshew is. He's like Gardner Minshew is stylistically he's Russell Wilson just without the natural talent, the mobility, and the top-notch arm strength.
Oh, God.
That's how he plays. He just improvises when there's not necessarily a reason to improvise, and it just doesn't it doesn't work out as well as often as it did for Russell Wilson earlier in his career.
Wow. Andy's ahead of his time, man. Tell you that.
Steelers-Ravens.
So the Steelers stay alive. They end up getting a late touchdown drive. Nice moment for Kenny Pickett, and a very nice moment for Najee Harris, who's had something of an off season here. This was really a big game from Harris when they needed it a lot. Not only doing running and catching the game winning touchdown, but also at one point just kind of picking up Kenny Pickett and carrying him like a I think that's how you'd carry like a dog who you are moving slightly out of the way.
Like
just sort of picking it up by the belly as it's on all fours and just sort of, shifting it a little bit.
Just like a bit, like a big, heavy old Bernese Mountain Dog, you know?
Yeah.
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 And Sunday Night Football slowed down the camera of Mike Tomlin when Kenny Pickett was coming off the field, and Mike Tomlin just looks at him and says, "Kenny effing Pickett." Like, that's what he just said to him, which is a very cool thing. I bet he's very excited about this. It was, dare I say, the angle on it, it looked nothing like it, but the angle and the intent on it was Mahomesian. And I saw Patrick Mahomes throw a very similar pass to Juju Smith-Schuster today that Smith-Schuster dropped in the end zone.
Mm-hmm. No, Pickett, Juju Smith-Schuster didn't drop the pass. He did drop the pass. That is true. Pickett, out of structure, I think looks pretty natural. And we talked about this earlier in the year where it's kind of like, boy, he kind of plays with a poise when things are breaking down. But then the ball ends up getting released and you're not quite sure where it's going at this point. It's not completely frantic. It's just not quite there yet. I mean, he looks like a rookie quarterback, and every once in a while he plays like it. But this was a nice final drive here to put this one away and again keep their playoff hopes alive.
15% chance according to 538 right now, with a season finale game against Cleveland, which, that's great. You know, let's see them go out and wax the Browns. That's what I want. Yeah, that's what I would like to see.
Yeah, and look, this was it would have just been such a bitter way to go out, to get swept by the Ravens, to get swept by Tyler Huntley, who is a fine number two quarterback there, but he's been out there a lot. I mean, people should know how to defend Tyler Huntley at this juncture of the Tyler Huntley experience. And if they lost this team again, another game where just a lot of like J.K. Dobbins breaking tackles, and it's not going to sit well with Mike Tomlin. Some of the defensive effort here, but obviously an overall impressive performance. And I don't really know what you take away from this. Even I still think it's T.J. Watt's spectacular. Cameron Hayward is still pretty good. Micah Fitzpatrick is really good. And other than that, it's not great.
I think you can both applaud it as a feat of coaching and also wonder what the meetings were like when they discussed the direction of the franchise, like over the last 3 years. That's just kind of how I see it. It's an incomplete roster. It's a 9-8 roster, and there might be a 9-8 football team in a week. You know,
I was gonna say I don't even think it's a 9-8 roster. I think it's like a 6-11 roster. And
it could be that's true. You give a lot of other guys, a lot of other coaches that roster.
Yep,
we're looking at Yikesville.
I mean, the fact that Mike Tomlin might keep that it's the non-losing record streak intact, which is just incredible considering. He absorbed Ben Roethlisberger in his prime, but then he had Ben Roethlisberger for a long time when he was not in his prime. He was not anywhere near a player in his prime, and he still just they just win. They just win a lot of games.
Yeah, it's a division of weird streaks, right? And Mike Tomlin, like, weird streaks that you would need to know for some sort of sports-based trivia, but never again for anything important in terms of the NFL. Like, John Harbaugh's preseason game-winning streak, and then Mike Tomlin just has had winning records very often. And, I mean, Steelers fans always want there to be, I've gone on the radio there and it's always been like, 9-8's not very good. And I was like, yeah, but like, you guys are never bad. And I think I would kind of rather be never bad than never good, you know what I mean? Or just good one time and then just bad for like another 20 years, you know?
I think there's something very underrated about playing meaningful football every year in January.
It's incredible.
that I guess if you win as many Super Bowls as that franchise has, perhaps you become a little bit numb to that. But yeah, it's, man, this team, I'm telling you, I thought this was a 5-win team. And they, I promised we wouldn't do playoff scenarios because it's just whatever. They're going to play the games. You'll know after next week. But I believe it's that they have to beat the Browns and then the perhaps Skylar Thompson-led Dolphins lose to the Jets and the Patriots have to lose to the Bills who, we're taping on Sunday, but the Bills are going to have something to play for next weekend.
Tasty. 538, that's better than a 20% chance. Go check your math, Nate Silver.
Yeah.
Get back in there. Get back on your abacus.
Dolphins, Patriots.
So yeah, the Patriots are in position to make the playoffs here. They'll have to beat the Bills week 18. I think there's still a scenario where they can lose that game and get back in. But we talked about this game a couple of times. We revisited it during the season. The first matchup back in week one where New England really had a beat on the Dolphins offensively in the second half, and you just kind of got the feeling they were just sort of champing at the bit to get another shot at this Mike McDaniel offense, which they did, and they played very well, albeit against first Teddy Bridgewater, and then Bridgewater got hurt and Skylar Thompson came back on. So we're deep down the Dolphins depth chart again, but I don't know. The Patriots are just kind of – the defense is really good. And they're just kind of surviving on offense, and that's where they are at this point.
You can almost see it at the beginning of a game. It feels like almost weekly where Matt Patricia will dial up one. I'm not even going to call it a deep shot, but mm-hmm. he'll let Mac Jones throw like more than 15 yards, and it's once on the first like two or three drives, and then if it hits, it feels like it's one of those Patriot games where everything's going to kind of be okay and they're going to definitely play good enough defense to stop mm-hmm. them and everything's going to be good. But if it doesn't, then you're like, okay, this is one of those Patriots games where they're going to lose like, 13-3, you know? And they got a couple of those. You know, the Thornton touchdown was obviously tremendous. It was a great catch, great throw. But they had one, I think, to Thornton too earlier on in the touchdown drive where it was like a medium, a medium throw that ended up, you know, he was in single coverage. He came down with it. And then that left you to believe like, okay, there's a chance that they end up doing this thing.
Yeah. It's again, it's one of those teams. We won't speak about them in the same terms that we speak about the Patriots, speak about the Packers, but I don't know. Like if you got into the postseason and you had to deal with this defense, mm-hmm. and you're not the Buffalo Bills, that makes me a little bit nervous. Kyle Duggar, another pick six in this game. They kind of have things figured out on that side of the ball.
We have to stop because we're turning into a certain, which is very good, but a certain football morning show that thrives on complimenting every team and then clipping those moments for social media when like one of the 32 teams ends up doing well. It's good business. Don't get me wrong. Like mm-hmm. I could write a column being like, I think these Patriots are going to do something or a thing, but all of that said and removed, you're right. However, I thought that about them last year too. And I was at that Buffalo game and like just the complete demolition of that Patriots team. I was just like, you can have a genius game plan, but it's just like Woodstock 99, Gary. It's like, you know, you can have a really cool song. And as you'll remember, you know, you can have a neat thing to play and it's very intricate and very deep and everybody loves it and it makes lots of great references. But then Korn comes on night one, Gary, and you're just, you know, you can't stop it. You can't slow it down. And I know that's why you went.
Obviously. Yeah. To see Matt Patricia's Korn cover band. Yes. They were on like the fourth stage.
Browns, Commanders.
So I don't have a ton to discuss on this game. The Commanders turned back to Carson Wentz, and it just didn't. They still don't have a quarterback, and I don't know. I will admit I still hang on to a very, very small piece of hope for Carson Wentz that it's gonna work out for him somewhere. Someone's gonna sort of unlock that 2017 version. But the more he plays football, the less likely that seems. And you know, this was all the issues they had with Taylor Heinicke. I mean, too many turnovers, too many mistakes, and you know, the Browns are a competent team at this point, and you're just not going to beat a competent NFL team.
Yeah, my only thing that I guess that I have coming out of this game is that there's, have you seen the social media fervor about Ron Rivera after this game or no?
No, I haven't. Fill
so,
me in.
So someone asked him about being eliminated from the playoffs, and he said afterwards, "We can get eliminated from the playoffs tonight." And everyone was like, "Oh my God, Ron Rivera is so dumb. He doesn't know that he's going to get eliminated from the playoffs." But I think he was being really sarcastic and he was just mad. And it's like one of those, like, our business is so weird. Someone could just have like this moment of humility and then they're just like, "Well, this coach doesn't even know." I'm pretty sure he knows. I'm pretty sure someone told him, even if that organization is complete garbage, mm-hmm. there has to be somebody there that's like, "Hey, Ron, you're going to get eliminated from the playoffs if the Packers win tonight." And yeah. I'm pretty sure he knew that.
I don't really mind if he didn't know. that's my
stance. That's true, too. Like, why? What does it even matter, right? Like, you're going to try to win anyway.
We would have won, but I didn't know we could get eliminated. Yeah, none of that really made, unless there was like some weird late game decision that would be like a tie versus a win type of thing, which, you know, there wasn't. They just weren't very good. They didn't play very well. And I think we're all kind of spared from another Washington postseason appearance at this point. I think
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I think we're all thankful to sort of stay away from that.
There were situations in this game. I think they had a 4th-and-1 in the first quarter where they tossed it to Robinson, and there was just like 9 Browns defenders in the backfield. It was like the entire offensive line just collapsed. And there are just moments. That's what is so weird about this team. There are moments when they're playing situationally average football, and that's frustrating to other teams sometimes, and they're actually playing mm-hmm. marginally well. And then this just happens. You're just like, "My God, what is this?" It's very difficult to digest sometimes.
Jets, Seahawks.
So the Seahawks stay alive, and that's good for them. The Jets are done, and this was just kind of a bummer because Mike White makes it back, and I don't know if there was a lingering issue with the leg. I would guess that's probably what it is. Maybe it was just sort of the, you know, clock strikes midnight, and that's kind of it. But Mike White was really, really not good in this game. Probably the same level that you were getting from Zach Wilson earlier in the season, and that's how you go out to Seattle and just don't do anything offensively.
Yeah, I think you still come away from this season. I don't know. I hope you do. If you're Woody Johnson and say, "All right, go get Garoppolo. Don't screw that up, and we'll be fine." And maybe it's not Jimmy G, maybe it's somebody else in that ilk, in that mold, but just get someone who can play in structure. Like, you don't need, this team's going to be able to protect you, you know, and play around you. It's just, I think they're gassed. I think they're done. I think by no fault of their own, like Rex Ryan made quarterback issues a bigger deal than they were. Mm-hmm. I think for all intents and purposes, this was not a Jetsian quarterback carousel. This was just like, okay, the first guy was really bad, the second guy got his ribs shattered, and the third guy is some wild long-haired what's the beef jerky brand? I don't know why I want to call him like old trapper.
Macho man Randy Savage. What are you talking about?
Like the Sasquatch from the beef jerky.
Oh,
courses.
I gotcha. Okay, yeah, yeah. I believe Jack Slinks is the brand.
Yeah, so that guy, you know, and so that's sort of what you got going on there. And I feel like he's the kind of coach that can cut, you can kind of read through the lines a little bit and just be like, come on, guys. Like, this is, we did all we could. And I know that there is the Sunday Splash report that Joe Douglas will not be shopping Zach Wilson around this offseason. I think that, to me, feels like a good deal of legalese, right? It's like, I'm not shopping, but then somebody came and asked. You know, it's one of those things where I can't imagine a scenario where they can have him on the roster with any confidence next year.
Yeah, and I'll make 3 points. Number one, I hope they're in on Derek Carr. I would prefer Derek Carr to Jim Garoppolo. I think Garoppolo is a fine plan B, but I think Derek Carr is still a top 15 quarterback in the league, and you get him in the right system, maybe you have a top 10 quarterback. I got a little bit nervous. This is my second point. I got a little bit nervous when they kept showing Chris Streveler on the sideline in this game, because no offense to him, and I think it would be interesting to run him out there for a series or two in maybe the first half or the third quarter, but the thing that was driving me nuts with the Zach Wilson fetching last week is it's like, oh yeah, we're down two possessions late in the third quarter. What we're going to do is roll out the guy that is going to lead us on a couple of 15-play, 9-minute drives to try and close the gap here. Like, it just reaches the point where it's like, no, you got to throw the ball. Like, the ball's got to be thrown downfield. You got to try and pick up some chunk plays. And, you know, if you throw incomplete, the clock stops. And that's your consolation. You can't run like a ball control thing and all the read option stuff at that point. And I do want to make the point, Connor, that, like, Sasquatch has a brand outside of just beef jerky commercials. He's still the Sasquatch.
But where has he been? You know, either reveal yourself or continue to reveal yourself to the larger public, or continue to be marginalized in commercials. That's my take. Like, come on out. You're out there.
He's lost control a little bit, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, you know, come out, like, run for public office, release a book of poetry, do something where we can get to know you outside of the just general societal idea of Sasquatch, you know,
outside of beef jerky and a very good Tenacious D episode.
He might not even like beef jerky. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Feels like you're stereotyping a little bit at that point. Like, he just sees, he's eating the dried carcasses of his prey.
Yeah, and he might be vegetarian for all we know.
Yeah.
Broncos, Chiefs.
All right, the lightning-ish round. The Broncos hung around with the Chiefs. The defense played very well. Jerry Rossberg, look, game management specialist. I mean, we know how highly they thought of him in that Broncos front office to bring him in. And he pressed the let's recover a muff punt button to get back into this game. That's something that the Broncos just hadn't considered earlier in the season. They should get more, flip the field 60-yard turnovers, and that would have worked out better. But yeah, they hung around. There were still no real answers for the quarterback. Cortland Sutton was really good in this game, though, and we haven't seen really good Cortland Sutton in a while. I think, yes, in part because of the quarterback, but also because of some injury stuff that's gone on this year. He was really competitive and very good in, you know, sort of making plays, and also he just blasted Legarius Sneed at the end of an interception return at one point that I think probably felt really good for him.
I'm sure it did. I have one quick Broncos point to make, which I'm just, you know, I don't want to sound, I'm done. My bell has been rung on this situation. Everybody knows where I stand on it, and where I've stood on it for the majority of the year. But everyone's saying, oh, Jerry Jeudy and all the receivers are coming out now and saying that they support him. Yeah, after the other guy's gone. Like, you know, like, if I spent the whole season on the podcast texting Shelby, or producer Shelby, I mean, like, God, Gary's so annoying, Gary's so annoying, Gary's so annoying. And then they got rid of, like, whoever else the other person is that controls the checks and the balances. I'd be like, oh, you know what I always thought about Gary? Great, great pod, great, great guy. Shelby and I don't have a private text, though, Gary. That's not happening. I really enjoy your company. But do you, like, this is a convenience move, and we all do it. I've done it, but, like, come on, you know, do we really think, like, all is hunky dory here now?
Yeah, no, I like, look, I don't know exactly what the situation is in the locker room. Obviously, we have seen a lot of on-field reaction, specifically from Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler.
They were like stomping up and down, like, throw me the ball. Are they like, yeah, man, this is the guy that's going to get us right? I don't think so.
Yeah, I find that very unlikely. I don't think they would ever have Russell Wilson's face up on a dartboard in their apartment or whatever it might be, but they're probably not thrilled at the developments of the past. Well, whatever. Past 9 months now or so.
I was going to say it's a lot. But he also ran for 2 touchdowns, which, again, is something that he did not do a great deal of. And so, yeah, if you get Russell Wilson leaving the pocket, if you get a couple picks, you know, you'll lose by 3 points instead of 40. Okay, great.
Yeah. And you just kind of wonder, has someone had that conversation with him? Or will someone have that conversation with him where you just be like, yeah, the way you insisted on playing for the first part of the year, it's not going to work. Like, we have to pay you, but we don't necessarily have to play you at this point because he was unplayable for most of this season.
Yeah. I don't know, though. I mean, it is what it is, right? I think you had the Chiefs at kind of three-quarter speed. They're just kind of trying to stay ahead enough in order to keep the hopes of the number one seed alive. And like, I did not see a notable, like, remember when Hugh Jackson was fired and then the Browns just went absolutely hair on fire with Greg Williams and Freddie Kitchens calling the plays. I don't think this was that. I didn't get that. The Broncos played the way that they played all year, but Russell Wilson ran for some touchdowns. I mean,
they got a red zone pick, and they got the muffed punt turnover to set up a touchdown.
That was a great red zone pick, by the way.
It was. They're a good defense. They got good players.
Jaguars, Texans.
All right, so the Jaguars get it set up for the AFC South title game with the Titans next week. Not a whole lot to get into for this one. Trevor Lawrence had the toe injury coming in and just didn't really have to do a whole lot because the Texans offensively did not do anything. And then the run game had a real big day for the Jaguars here. Everyone scored. Stoop Connor scored. Jamichael Hasty scored. Travis Etienne had a 62-yard touchdown run. Good day for the Jaguars.
This was sort of we've had a couple home run plays, but not nearly as many as I would have thought out of Travis Etienne this year. But this was the first time where I think we saw what that can do to an opposing defense because he's just so fast. And when he gets second level, he's just absolutely gone. And I love the fact that, I mean, again, home run plays are not something you manufacture. They're things that just sort of happen. But if we can start to build that confidence, like if he breaks like one more tackle, I think he is someone who can be a legitimate playoff altering presence. I really do. I think this run game can be really special. And with Hasty at the goal line, I really do think that this is something that could change. I'm much more afraid of Jacksonville in the AFC like sneaking in as like that dangerous team than the Packers sneaking in at the bottom of the NFC.
Yeah, I agree.
Rams, Chargers.
So the Rams come back down to earth a little bit in this one. The thing that, if you didn't watch this game and you're looking at the box score numbers, you're probably not blown away by what the Chargers did offensively. Obviously, they ran the ball really well, and that's all well and good. Austin Eckler continues to be very good. That passing game, it's starting to move its way upfield. It's starting to look like what it should look like when you have Justin Herbert as your quarterback. Obviously, Mike Williams and Keenan Allen being back and healthy has a lot to do with that. But this looks like it is trending up and very quickly up for the Chargers.
Yeah, I liked a lot of the things that they did today. I thought they're back, being able to manufacture touches for players, I thought got better than I've seen it in the last few weeks. I thought the offensive line played okay, and I thought the way that they were able to, you know, test deep, test often, test early, I just think that's a good precedent to set for Justin Herbert, where it's kind of Mahomesy in the fact that it's like, hey, this guy's got a rocket. We're just going to show it off on like the first or the second drive and just remind you that we can do this at any time if we so choose. And we have a very good deep threat. And worst case scenario, he's probably pretty good at drawing a pass interference out of this. So I love the combination of all those things. And then plus when you have Eckler, just such an underrated weapon. Really is.
Bears, Lions.
So the Lions take care of business, and the Bears look perfectly happy to clinch that number two pick in the draft. But yeah, for the Lions, big day for the offense. They give up some Justin Fields moments on defense, but again, just a nice team here. And if they beat the Packers next week and the Rams knock off the Seahawks, they would go to the playoffs.
I am very happy for the Lions. I really hope it happens. I wonder if you're the Bears, what you do here. Are you? This is going to sound like wildly contrarian and inappropriate, but are you locked in with Fields next year? Are you ready to go?
Yeah, I think so.
Is it at the point where it's even close to being questioned or not?
He's not a lock. I think there's obviously enough to move forward with him. I just don't think there is a... I love Bryce Young. I'd take Bryce Young over him. But I probably wouldn't take Will Levis over him just because Levis is such a question mark. And there's just no one else you'd really put in that conversation. So you sit there. You know, the move is probably you start to reload the entire thing. Hopefully someone comes up and wants Levis or something like that. And then you restock... basically the entire roster outside of the quarterback at this point. But, it's a good spot for them to be in. I think it's a trade-down spot for them, and you go from there.
Cardinals, Falcons.
Yeah, this is it.
Game was so bad.
Damon Blau, Desmond Ridder. What else do you want? I appreciated Younghoe Koo. He had, like, the game-winning kick. It was like a 20-yard field goal or whatever it was to win it 20-19 as time expired. And it was just the most muted, like, he kicked it through and kind of, like, got a high five. It just looked like a PAT was the reaction to it. There was no, you know, big celebration afterwards. But Desmond Ridder gets a win here, and the Falcons move to 6-10. They don't really – I was going to say – like, oh, they moved to 6-9 and avoid 10. No, they already have 10 losses here. So nobody won in this game.
I finally figured out who the Falcons head coach looks like. Do you want to follow me here on this?
Yes.
He looks like what Andy from Toy Story would grow up to be as a person.
Oh, all right. That's pretty good.
He's got a very Andy from Toy Story face.
Yeah.
But yeah, this game was just unwatchable. And like you saw the extra points and the field goals during this one, and it was just there's like half a dozen people just sitting there. Like it was, I can't say TCU. It's probably like, I don't know. What are bad college football teams now? I've like logged off college football. Two bad college football teams?
Like a Rutgers, Maryland type of game.
Yeah. Oh, poor Rutgers. You had to go regional. Yeah.
Piscataway in November.
Oh, yeah. This was bad, but glad the game's over. This game was awful and unwatchable, but the good thing is that it's not still happening. Drake London's good, though.
Yeah, I don't know. They got maybe something cooking in Atlanta if they find a quarterback. I don't know if Desmond Ridder's the guy or not, but it's not where it was a year ago where they were just brutal to watch, but it's not much better. The MMQB NFL podcast is Connor Hoare and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody, and our senior podcast producer is Dan Bloom. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB Super Bowl champion. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts. And once you do, please leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
Weight loss solutions are not one-size-fits-all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert-guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.